7 o'clock. Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
David.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are talking about steps 8 and 9. And if you would, please help me welcome our panel. We have Kate and Ryan. They've come all the way from Williamsburg. Some length. Okay, so I don't have steps 8 and 9 written down on this page, so I'm not even going to try to wing it. We're going to make a list of people we've harmed, and we're going to talk about making amends to them. Cool. We're going to start on page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now, we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. I believe Ryan won the toss.
Yep, I'll go first. My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
My sobriety date is September 2nd, 2014. I have a sponsor, and I work at SEPS, and I go to meetings and do service. Thanks for having me tonight. But I guess I'll just do a quick recap. I started drinking when I was about 15. Basically just wanted to fit in with everyone. Drank alcoholically from the very first time. My parents taught me how to drink, and it was to drink a lot. My dad mostly taught me that. But I'll tie back in later with my resentments, but I had major resentments for my dad and a few other friends from high school, and when those resentments occurred, I started drinking a lot more heavily, trying to escape, and basically just it all spiraled pretty quickly. Fast forward till I was 27 or 24, I went to rehab in Tennessee. I was basically drinking every day, doing other drugs, you know, putting needles in my arm, just couldn't stop, couldn't do anything for less than like an hour. I had to do something constantly. And by the time I had gotten to rehab, I knew I was pretty screwed as far as how deep of a hole I had dug. I tried to quit on my own multiple times, but that was pretty obvious that I couldn't. After rehab, I experimented one more time, and after that, I got in trouble, and after that, I was totally ready to do what you guys told me. So that's when I got a sponsor again. We did steps 1 through 3 in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did my third step with my sponsor next to the river, you know, basically committing myself to doing the rest of the steps and to living this way of life. My fourth step, I did it to the best of my ability, being as honest as I possibly could, and told my sponsor everything that was on it. So we did 6 and 7, and that brings me now to where we are tonight, steps 8 and 9. So when I was ready to do step 8, it was pretty straightforward because I had a lot of the people on my, well, step 8 is basically to make a list of all the people I had harmed, and that was pretty obvious after doing my fourth step. A lot of people were on that fourth step. And I just want to make it clear that if you're trying to do a 8th and 9th step without a sponsor, that's really not a good idea. I did all the other steps before 8 and 9 and was like checked off, and with my sponsor, we were talking about everything the whole time until he and I were on the same page that it was time to do step 8 and 9. When I had gotten out of rehab, I tried to do kind of a self 8 and 9, and it didn't have anywhere near the same effect as this, and doing it with my sponsor. And, you know, the other steps are about me, about trying to figure out what's wrong with me, but steps 8 and 9 involve other people, and that can be a very sensitive subject, and I didn't want to cause any other harm than it had already caused. So doing it with a sponsor, relaying all my thoughts off with him was pretty important. But step 8 is just a list. It's nothing more than that. And my sponsor told me to put a check or an X next to all the people I had listed, whether I was willing or not willing. And I had become pretty desperate and willing to do whatever, so I had some that I wasn't really excited about, but I was still willing to do it. But the people on my list were mostly my family, and then some core people, friends from my high school that had, we had, you know, a pretty devastating thing happen, and I became very resentful at my best friends and my girlfriend. And as a young person, that really messed me up and caused a lot of resentment. So, you know, I had a few other things like some institutions and some principles that had, you know, I had wronged or that I, not sorry, that's my resentment. But I had some other people from you know, later on in life, but those were like the core people that I had harmed the most. And yeah, so I'll stop on that one.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Kate. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kate.
I'm so nervous. I haven't spoken into a microphone since I sang in my 10th grade musical, The Music Man. I was a pickle little lady, and luckily I look better now than I did then, but just bear with me. My sobriety date is January 1st, 2017. My home group is sober at 7:04. I have a sponsor. I moved here from Philadelphia and really, really got into the program more here. I didn't think something in AA like this would really exist for me, you know, considering my experience in Philadelphia. So I really dove in here with 2 feet, knowing nobody. It was the perfect opportunity to just throw myself out there and really pick a sponsor that I needed, somebody that wasn't gonna put up with my crap, and somebody who's gonna call me out, and somebody that was gonna be honest, and really the first person I was gonna build a true, honest relationship with, where I wasn't afraid to say what I did wrong, or, you know, say that I'm having an emotional roller coaster and I'm being psycho right now. Like, what do I do? How do I get rid of this feeling? And the solutions to those, all those things, were through the steps. And for me, the biggest part of doing step 8 and 9 is step 3 and 4. So you turning my will and my life over to God, and then also pointing out all of my character defects. I really, really had to understand the impact my character defects had on the resentments that I created in my life, because there were so many parts of situations that I was a part of, whether it was my motives or my motives. So my motives got me in a lot of situations where I created resentments. I had a bad roommate, and I, you know, that had a huge resentment against her and everything she did in the house and how messy she was and her dog did this and blah, blah, blah. When in reality, I couldn't find my part in all these things until I looked at, one, my character defects, and two, my motives. So my motives were, well, I needed somebody to pay the rent, and you were a woman, so you fit that criteria, and that's pretty much it. That's what I needed from you. I needed bills paid, and my character defects came out in that I had miscommunication issues. I got angry and resentful really quickly when she didn't act the way I expected her to act as a roommate, how I expect an adult woman in AA to behave. You know what I mean? Just like all these expectations I had to kind of go through and delve in and rid of. Because my expectations are usually what get me my resentments in the first place. When I did my list, I started with the easiest ones, obviously, because I'm a coward. And I, you know, knocked those out, and I was like, wow, I feel like my chest is open. Like, I feel so good right now. Let's go play basketball or something. Like, I never thought I would feel that good, really, after doing something that I had so much fear and so much hesitancy to do. I was embarrassed, you know, and I my ego was bigger than my willingness sometimes. Mm-hmm. But when I gave my willingness to God and I proved that I was doing it, it became easier to do them, and really the results were in God's hands, regardless of who I did it to and how it turned out. You know, I'm a future thinker. I think of, well, what if, and well, what if this happens, and what if they say that, and what if they do that. Again, that's giving my will and my life over to God. It's not up to me. I'm doing what I need to do for myself. And the other issue I had with doing this was, my first instinct is to always say, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I can't play a sport without bumping into you and saying sorry. People are like, get her out of here. I'm going to hit her in the face with the basketball if she doesn't stop saying sorry. Because am I really sorry I ran into you? No, I just don't know what else to say because I'm awkward. And, you know, it really was getting to know that I can't just say sorry and things go away. I can't try and manipulate people into responding the way I want them to, or or say, oh, I'm sober now and this is happening and I've done this. I had to really, truly, from the bottom of my heart, say exactly what I did to you and say, what can I do to make this right? And say, I was wrong. And not having a filler word like, I'm sorry, or I was drunk, or, you know, this and that, made it so much harder, but so much more rewarding. Yeah, that's all I got.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we looked over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. Some people we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but that is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. Ryan?
This paragraph, for me, seems like they're kind of trying to, like, caution me with my character defects before I go into this situation, because I know that I want to seem more important and more... boastful than I really am. And I could use this opportunity as a way to try and get people to somehow be impressed with me. And I think that's what they're trying to say, is to, like, we're not supposed to go into this situation with a big ego, or like we're better than or important now because we're sober and we're making amends. I think this is a warning to just try to come approach the person with humility, you know, and to be sincere, and we're not trying to win a trophy or anything, or win, you know, all of their affection. We're seriously trying to just go and make right the wrongs that I've done, you know, throughout my life, and by approaching them in a humble manner, one-on-one, I think it's a lot better than well, it's going to be more effective than trying to be, you know, impressive. And for me, what I thought, and when I went to my, you know, went up to these people, was how would I want someone to approach me? You know, I just basically just talked to them like they were, you know, my friend, the same way I would anyone else. And I wasn't trying to you know, impress them with my newfound spiritual way of life, you know. I didn't even really mention AA with some of them. I just said, you know, it's just been bothering me. It's important to me that I do this with you. I'd like to make right, you know, the things that happened between us. And if, you know, tell me what I can do to make that right. And I also gave them the chance to tell me what I might have left off or might not have known that I had done to them. So gave them a chance to say, well, was there anything I did that I'm not aware of? And sometimes they would say some things, but it wasn't surprising. But in the end, the people, you know, I went up to do my amends with were very reasonable and very accepting of me trying to do this. I'm pretty lucky I didn't have anyone blow up on me, and it all went pretty smoothly, and I was pleasantly surprised when I was done. And I pass.
Hi. So for me, I feel like the way I made my amends to people was kind of like how when we talk about when you approach like a newcomer in AA, you're not supposed to like, you shouldn't throw God right in or talk about your higher power, all this stuff. It's kind of like they see that they want what you have based on your, I guess, your lifestyle and how you're living your life and things like that. And I feel like being an example in that way means more than saying, oh, well, this happened because of God. They don't really need to know that. And for mine, my higher power obviously is a reason that I'm here and that I'm able, that I'm sitting here speaking in a microphone at a meeting, in an AA meeting, which is super cool. Like, I don't think that most people would have really taken my message as clearly if I had mentioned God and my spiritualness, and you know, I said 237 prayers before I'm doing this right now. Like, I just don't think it would have the same effect. And I didn't talk about that. And part of it, to me, at least for me, I would use it as a manipulative way, that I'm better because of this, and I'm doing this now because of this, you know. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be, as like Ryan said, not egotistical and just practice complete humility and just like, bring it on, tell me what I did and let's just hash this out and just do it. I can't live like this anymore. And I like to think that my spiritual life, if I'm working my program correctly, is evident in how I treat other people and what I do and don't do with my life. It's another big step for me to, for once in my life, take responsibility and try and set things right instead of just hiding from them and ignoring the people. If I see someone across the street running another way, you know, just like immature things like that that I'm just so tired of doing. And I guess another thing would be if I were to use God in AA and talk about this and I'm that and all these amends, and then I go and I mess up, or I go and I drink, or I blow up on that person again, have to make another amends, what does that show for the program or being a God believer? You know, it's kind of like the whole AA spokesperson controversy. So, but that's my opinion. So, thanks.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God when it will serve a good purpose. We're willing to announce our convictions of tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be that he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude about him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Right? Yeah, I definitely had a couple people, especially my dad and a couple people that I thought harmed me more than I harmed them. I mean, I think that's natural. But in the end, if I honestly looked at myself, I did harm to them. You know, it doesn't matter what they did to me. And that's not why I'm going to them. I'm not going to them because of what they did. I'm doing it because of what I did. So I had to push my, you know, opinion of their wrongdoings aside and do it for me, you know, and do it for them and for me, but just clear away my side of the street. What they did wasn't important for me to do this. And then talking about the question of how to approach the man we hated will arise, me and David were just talking about that. When I have my list and I'm looking at it, I'm like, how am I going to do this? You know, where am I going to do it? Like, how am I going to do this? And all these thoughts are going through your head, like getting all nervous and stuff. And I'll tell you what happened to me. A lot of the people I had to make amends to, the opportunity, God just created the opportunity if I was willing to see it. You know, when it was time to make amends to my father, he then planned a little work trip for me and him to do together. What do you know? I mean, perfect time, just me and him to to do it. You know, I didn't have to plan anything myself. The opportunity was just given to me by the universe. Another example was this one of my friends from high school. He was next up on my list, and lo and behold, I saw him at an art festival 2 months in a row, because it was every month. And now I'm seeing this guy like more than once, and we're talking, and I figured, you know, I think I messaged him on Facebook, you know, because we had already kind of started contact, so it wasn't super awkward. And it was just, it just flowed, because God had presented the opportunity to me, and I took advantage of it. You know, I didn't have to, a couple people I had to, you know, initiate out of the blue, but for the most part, God, it made it easy. I didn't have to figure it out. But I was willing to do it, and I was willing to see it as that. And so when that opportunity was given to me, I did it. Let's see. But yeah, we go to him, and I just, yeah, that's all I got. I don't have anything.
So I guess I just want to start off saying that I realized when I was thinking about this the other night, actually after I did an amends last night, I'll tell you the story, I'll get there. I go into it thinking about how dirty both of the sides of our streets are. Like, her side is like the Virginia Beach dump, right? And mine is like half of that dump, I think. And I'm like, but I'm going to go and do this because this is the only way for me to be free of this. This is for me how I'm going to get the promises, right? So after I did it, my side of the street was squeaky clean, and I couldn't even see her side of the street. It was so far away, so out of mind, that that's where the peace comes from, you know I did what I needed to do. She didn't say sorry or say anything back to me like, I shouldn't have done this or I shouldn't have done that. And I didn't care, because I don't need that from her, and I didn't expect that from her. Maybe beforehand I wanted it from her, and something in the back of my head's like, well, you should apologize for this, 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 and this. That's not what this is about. And at the end, I wasn't even thinking about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of funny, actually, because you work yourself up. So I worked myself up so much. I'm like shaking on the phone. Anyway, so how that came about was, my old roommate in Philadelphia was my number one biggest resentment. She was my number one biggest amends. I put little dots down my list of like dots and then triangles and like stars who I can do easily, triangles who it might hurt a little bit, it's kind of pointy, but I can do it. And then the circles were like, I'm going to go round and round and round and never do it. Right? So God had other plans for me. I was asked to speak on step 8 and 9, right? And she lives in Pennsylvania, so I was like, I'm never going to get a chance to see her. Maybe, you know, when I go home, I'll visit her, and knowing I'm never going to do that because it's a short visit. I have other things to do. I'm not going to go out of my way for that. So my sponsor tells me, you know what, it's going to be too hard to try and see her, so you should just call her and do it over the phone. And I was like, okay. Okay. And then I find out I'm speaking on steps 8 and 9, and I'm like, well, I could just go and lie, but I'm not going to, because speaking here made me do my amends last night. Ryan came out of the shower, and I was like, I just made my biggest amends. He goes, while I was in the shower? The night before we're speaking on 8 and 9? Are you serious? I'm like, God works in mysterious ways, right? So, I mean, like, seriously, that is an opportunity that I could have just not done it. I could have not told my sponsor. I could have, you know, just said, oh, I forgot. I'm so busy with my new job and moving. I just totally forgot. But I didn't, because I had the willingness. God put it in front of me, and I had a choice. And my choice was to do it. Because it was just going to eat at me. And I can't deal with that anymore. I can't have that feeling anymore. It's really destructive for me. So my other amends, other biggest amends. So my roommate was when I was drinking, right? So that felt kind of easier. I learned to forgive myself so I can forgive others and do my amends. My second biggest amends was while I was sober. And I always wondered what that would be like, and I just thought this program magically made you like a better person and all this stuff. It's not that easy, it's not that simple, let me tell you. I had huge amends with her, huge problems with her, and vice versa. And most of the reason, honestly, why I didn't like her and problems happened was because she had similar character defects to me. So just because I'm an AA and I'm sick doesn't mean these people that aren't in AA aren't sick in some way. So she finally gets a new job and is leaving after like 15 years. Like everyone said, she's never actually going to leave. She always threatens that. She always says that. Well, guess what? She was actually leaving. And she put in like 3 days notice. And I was like, I called Amy and I was like, oh my God, I have 3 days to do this. 3 days. I have no idea what I'm going to say. I wrote this draft and this draft and this draft and this draft. And I'm freaking terrified because she's probably going to punch me in the face. So I went in on literally her last day, procrastination at its finest, her last day, an hour before she was leaving, and did my amends, right? She knew I was in the program. I had gone to an event where there was big drinking, and it was before, it's like when we were friends, and I had told her that I was really uncomfortable and I might have to leave and go to a meeting, I'm in the program, blah, 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 blah. Her dad was in the program, so we kind of talked about that, blah, blah, blah. So then that happened. My two biggest resentments that clearly I would not have done on my own unless somebody kicked me in the ass, you know what I mean? And presented that opportunity to me. And just the direction came from God as long as I had the willingness, even if I had prayed for it over and over and over and over again. And even if I felt like I was gonna crap my pants right before I did it, you know? It doesn't matter, I did it. And the sense of freedom and peace I felt after doing my two biggest resentments, don't get me wrong, I was glad she was leaving, but still, I did it, and that's the most important part. So that's all. Thanks.
Nice. All right, we're going to continue on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do, his faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if somebody does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part, it's water over the dam. Ron?
Well, I didn't have anybody throw me out of the office. That was nice. But I kind of said that earlier that like I stuck to my own faults. I didn't mention anything about theirs. And for most of all the people, they all, as I opened up and started telling them, you know, I did this and I know I did that and I'm, you know, what can I do to make it right? After I'd done my spiel, you know, they started saying, well, you know, I haven't been the best this either, you know, and this and that. And, man, for one person, hearing them say, admit their fault felt so good. Because I was just like, it had been eating away at me, both of us, both of what we did, had been eating away at me for so long that, you know, to have both of us admit, I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but to have both of us say, you know, bring it to the surface and tell each other, you know, that we knew we had done wrong, that had changed. That changed my whole life because I had been drinking because of, like, in my mind, that was my reason to do what I was doing to myself. That gave me the right and the reason. You know, these people did this one person basically did this to me, so I have a right to destroy myself and to to drink and to drug and to do all these things, because you hurt me that bad, you know. That's, you know, I drink at people. If they hurt me, I would drink at them in resentment and do things to really just hurt myself, because I thought it was somehow get back at them. But that was my reason for so long. And when we both, you know, cleared the air about what we had done to each other, I no longer had that reason, really. And I really didn't want it anymore either, you know. It was an indescribable feeling of that part of me was let go. It was just totally able to dissolve. There was no more reason to be resentful at this person or to hurt myself because of that resentment. And I don't even think about it anymore. It doesn't run my life or tell me what to do or control me anymore. It had so much control over me that I didn't even realize how much control it had, you know, until it was gone. It was like a piece of me was a dead piece of me was shed off, you know, so that the rest of me could grow and flourish. And after that, my life did start to flourish, and things really started happening. You know, I had room in my brain to think about other things rather than to think about this resentment and these things that we had done. It freed up a lot of energy and space in my life to do something else, and that's what I was looking for. I didn't know how to do that on my own. And there's no way I could have accomplished the same thing without the directions that we're reading right now. I don't think it would have had the same impact. And they give us clear-cut directions about how to approach and make the amends, what to say. You know, I didn't have to make anything up. If I had done it on my own way, I don't think it would have even come close to having the success that it did. But it's pretty amazing going to someone humbly, admitting your faults, they're like, oh, well, I guess this is a good time for me to do it too. And it might not happen all the time on every example, in every case, but for me it did on one of the biggest ones. And it freed both of us up. So I'm grateful for that opportunity. And that's all I got.
So my first amend was my mom. And I remember thinking, I wonder what she's going to, if she's going to say anything back or if she's going to just kind of wave it off or whatever. And instead, they came to visit us in Williamsburg, and Ryan went somewhere with my dad, and I was like, oh, my mom's alone. I'm going to do it real quick right now. And I remember, I mean, my amends to her were pretty much, they didn't see me much when I was drinking. I lived like 15, 20 minutes away, but I avoided going over there at all costs. But most of it was for, I guess, my childhood and how I behaved as a teenager and things we'd said back and forth. Like one time I yelled at her, I wish you never adopted me, and like, just things like when I was like 12, but that stuck with me my entire freaking life. And she said, me too. So I thought maybe she would say, you know, I don't really wish. I know she doesn't really wish that. They're the best parents in the world. And my mom was kind of just like, what are you talking about? What are you saying? Why are you saying this? What's wrong? What's going on? Are you pregnant? Like ridiculous stuff. And I was like, okay, wow. Where did that come from? And two, I need to do this for the program. Mom, you know this. She was like, whatever, let's get ice cream. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. She was like, you were just being a teenager. Like, you're a teenage girl. You went to a private Catholic all-girls school. Like, come on, we get it. And my dad, when I did my dad later, that one I thought would be easy, but it was so hard. And I didn't really know exactly what I was making amends for. I didn't have anything specific. because again, like I said, I didn't see them much when I was drinking, so they didn't really reap the effects other than seeing me like really drunk. And one time I was at the beach house and I had like this fit of hiccups and my dad was just so mad at me. So other than things like that, I never stole from them. I never, you know, I don't feel like I hurt them in any certain way other than just being kind of a disappointing daughter. And that's really what I wanted him to say. And my dad is also in the program. And lo and behold, my dad made amends back to me. And we both kind of like shook it off, like, you didn't bother me and I didn't bother you, so we're cool. You know, but it's the fact that we had that in our hearts that if we did hurt each other in another way that we didn't know about, we did it anyway. So that was really the only one that, you know, said something back to me. I did a couple of my best friends from high school, and you know, some really nasty words were said, and I don't think we fought. I don't think I've ever fought anybody, but you never know. And I apologized to her from a football game at Penn State where we really went at it, and I was like, I was having dreams about it. Like, this was, I don't know, 2010, maybe earlier. Like, and I was still thinking about it, still dreaming about it, still like super embarrassed. When we got together, you know, once a month or every couple months, I was like mortified and I felt like a dog with my tail between my legs. And I was like, she probably doesn't even remember. Oh, she remembered. She remembered. And she said, you know, I was thinking about that the other day too. You were a real bitch. And I was like, I know, I was, and I should never have talked to you. You know what I mean? Like, and I said things and then we were good. Honestly, we're in two different places in our life right now, so I was upset that I didn't feel the closeness to her again after that. But she's married and has children, and we're just in like two different spots in our life, so we don't really have as much in common to connect with anymore, I guess. She's more hanging out with like other moms and stuff in Jersey. And another amends I made was two friends from work when I worked at Penn, University of Pennsylvania, in Philly, and I was a terrible employee. I worked there for 7 years. I do not know how I didn't get fired. I seriously do not. I went in smelling like alcohol all the time. I called out all the time. I can't tell you how many flat tires I've had. I've never had a flat tire. If you asked me a question about it, I couldn't tell you. I'm sure all of that stuff was pretty obvious. And when I left Penn, I moved here and got a new job, but I had written the two closest people to me that I worked with that were affected the most, that our relationships were severely damaged from my behavior and me like kind of screwing them over daily for a couple years. I had written them letters before I left and just kind of said exactly what I would have said to amends now. And I was only fresh out of rehab, 2 months sober, and I didn't know it at the time, but those were amends. And Patty had gotten a letter from me, and she messaged me afterwards and, you know, said, I still love you, take care of yourself. Well, she's coming to our wedding and she's making all the wedding favors. Like, that wouldn't have happened, I don't think, if I, you know, had just left and ran off and just, you know, kind of just put it out of mind and ran away from it ultimately. And that's not what I did. So those were the strongest amends in my mind that made the biggest impact on me besides those other tough ones that we already talked about. But yeah, that's all. Thanks.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 78. I don't want to make anybody nervous with this paragraph, but it starts off, most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know about it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go. For we're liable to drink if we are afraid to face them, right?
Well, I was really young, in the peak of my alcoholism. I never had a full, you know, like a real job, except doing illegal things. But as far as owing money goes, I cannot tell you how much money I wasted on court costs and lawyers and substances and all these different things, mostly money that I got from my parents. Every time I got in trouble, my dad did help me out. And so as far as owing money goes, when I did my dad's amends, I did tell him, I know, I realized that we've spent a lot of money on lawyers and we've spent a lot of money on, you know, anything that had to do with the repercussions of my drinking. And he knew, he agreed, but I told him, if, you know, I will pay you back to the best of my ability, everything that I owe you. And I was serious about it, or work it off, whatever. And he said that you just keep doing what you're doing, and don't worry about it. So that was the most money I probably owed. Another financial amends that I've made was a smaller one. I had gotten in trouble, but before I had gotten in trouble, my friend had sent me some money, and you know, as a result, I got in trouble, and he didn't have his money anymore. Let's just leave it at that. But when I got sober, about 5 or 6 months later, I didn't even have like that great of a job. I made it a point to send him a cashier's check for everything that I had lost of his. Didn't matter how I lost it or why or what it was for, but the fact was that I owed it to him, and that was the directions in the book, and I went out of my way to pay it off. Even though I was broke, you know, had a really low-paying job, I couldn't find a job because I was a felon, and I was working for myself, doing my own little things here and there. And with what I got, I managed to scrape together enough to pay him back. Because it wasn't about the money at that point, it was about the you know, the act of doing that, you know. So I did owe money. Those were the two examples that, you know, luckily I didn't get into any huge debt or anything like that. But I definitely had, it was mostly the lawyer costs, and lawyers are expensive. So, but that's it.
The only financial amends I had were to my PNC card. I was in so much debt, I'm still paying it off. I guess when I was younger, we used to steal like quarters from my dad's little baseball cap. We used to like hold ice cream from Dairy Queen. We used to do that. But other than that, luckily I didn't really have any financial amends, but I racked up some pretty good debt. I also did a master's program and was pretty drunk through it all. So I consider that kind of like a debt too, because I can't say that I remember much. And I guess if I did, I would have to be just as willing, and just because I don't have a financial amend now or then doesn't mean I'm not going to have one in the future. So anything can happen, sober or not. Now it's just kind of like a living amends for that, just watching my money and trying to be careful about what I spend. I mean, in the beginning it was like, well, I used to spend $50 to $200 a day on alcohol. So instead, I'm just going to put it into a new car. And that didn't help me because I was still spending the money anyway. I was just finding a way to treat myself for not being an alcoholic, or, you know, not being an active alcoholism, which is hilarious because it's like, what's wrong with you? Or it's a Friday night, I can go eat whatever I want, you know? I don't know. I'm just babbling now. But yeah, no financial amends. Maybe to, if I like really try and think about it, maybe to jobs where I like lied on time cards and things like that, which we might have to go back and revisit. But just if I really kind of pinpoint anything I can think of, like, you really have to be honest about it. And I'm really glad that I don't have any of those. That's all.
Awesome. Okay, we got one more paragraph and a couple minutes each left on page 79.
Very good.
Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we've decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing, we have to be, we must not shrink at anything.
Yeah, it's doing amends for me wasn't the easiest thing I ever did in my life. And if it was easy, I think everyone would do it. But I had reached a point in my life where it was all or nothing. It was like this was my last shot, and I was starting to see a change already. So I was believing more and more in this thing, and so if you're telling me to do this and it works, then I'm gonna do it. But before each asking for willingness or any stuff like that, before each amends, I did make sure to pray. I did third step prayer, I did seventh step, and I asked my higher power to basically just give me the strength and to guide my words and thoughts while I was doing what I was about to do. I was nervous, you know, every single time. But I've been nervous doing other stuff before too, you know. I mean, I took major risks and chances doing some really dumb shit. And the way I looked at it, this was like peanuts compared to what I was doing before. And that, with that train of thought, it kind of helped a little bit, you know, but it's still not easy. But, you know, I was super willing. It was like every time I reached a point where I was in a speed bump or something was tough to do, I just thought of the alternative. And that gave me more motivation. You know, I was like, well, what's the alternative? That's what I kept thinking, you know. What if you don't do this, then what are you going to do, you know? You want more of what you had? No. You want something different. I wanted something different. So, you know, I was willing. I did get nervous. When I got nervous, I asked for strength. And I also remembered where I came from. And that's all I got.
Thanks.
In my mind, it was, if I could go 24 hours without drinking and survive, I can do an amend and survive. An amend could take 10 minutes, and that's 24 hours without drinking. And that was really, really hard for me. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. And then it was another 24 hours, and then another 24 hours. And again, like I said, if that's what I needed to do to get the promises, that's what kept me here, the promises. Thinking, wow, you can feel like that? Wow, I could do that? Wow, no way, I'm gonna have a different thinking? Wow, I could be positive for like 1 second of the day? That's awesome, I'll take a chance, you know? I'll give it a try, because obviously nothing else was working. And I don't want to go through trying to start over all over again, because that was really friggin' hard, and I don't want to do that again. I guess this isn't the same. I lost my position, and it ties into AA in that I was sober, and I took advantage of government resources. And I had a little bit of a dispute with my boss, who I also made an amends to. And then I felt like she sought me out to get me in trouble and get me gone, which I felt like she wanted to anyway. But the fact was that I made my amends, and I was still doing something I shouldn't have. And it's a big deal to me, like right now, because, or I guess it was a bigger deal a couple months ago, but in my mind, I was helping someone else. in my mind, it was only fair. You know, just the justification of everything came out. Well, they don't pay me enough, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and I should be allowed to do this, and I'm just not going to tell anyone, you know. And what that led to was me being escorted off of government property, which was super fun. So I guess that kind of ties in with being kicked out of an office, except being escorted with a box of, like, your flour and coffee cup going off the campus is pretty embarrassing. Plus, I was like, what's that going to look like on my record? It didn't go on my record. So many God moments happened that it turned out everything since then has turned out better than I would have planned for myself. And if I hadn't done my amends and I hadn't looked at my personal consequence, or not my my character defects, there's no way I would have been able to forgive myself for that, knowing what I did wrong and not justifying everything and looking at my faults, my character defects, like I said, and my motives. And if I didn't have this program, I would have gone back out and drank for sure, because I felt so crappy about myself. And the fact that I got in trouble and fired for the very first time sober, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I might as well have been drunk. So it's just like things like that. Like, okay, I can still mess up, but this time I've learned to forgive myself and understand, okay, this is what I need to work on. This is what my program's lacking. This is what I need to do. And actually see the benefits and the positive things that come out of it and the things I've learned. I'll never do that again, obviously. And always, I have to learn the hard way. I have to get in trouble and get beat down before I actually do something the right way and before I do what I'm supposed to do. Kind of like when I learned to drive. I hit a bumper. I hit the curb on the very first 2 seconds of being in the car. I have to learn everything the hard way by messing up first. And if that's the way I learn and I get along in life, fine. But I don't know how I really make amends to that other than living amends. A lot of my things are living amends. And after how my last job went, being drunk all the time and calling out and being unreliable and not being responsible for myself, like, that's something that I'm doing now. And now I have even more things to do since my last experience. Don't steal shit and don't use their stuff without asking. And if you have to pay for something, pay for it. And yeah, all of that. So I wouldn't be here if I didn't go through these steps, and I definitely wouldn't be here being able to talk about this and be in the peaceful place I'm at if I didn't do steps 8 and 9 and continue onward. So thanks, that's all.
Awesome, thank you. We're gonna pass the 7 tradition basket. The 7 tradition states, thank you. The 7 tradition states that the AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contribution. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7 tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffer. Although the contribution amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Okay, cool. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members.
What?
Newcomers, you're the reason we're here tonight. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like your first name so we can welcome you. What's your first name?
Oh, sorry, I'm Alex.
Alex, welcome.
I'm Jennifer, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jennifer, welcome.
I'm Jerry.
Jerry, welcome.
Brian, I'm not
welcome. Brian,
welcome.
Daryl, I'm not
welcome. Daryl, welcome.
Aaron, I'm not
welcome. Hey, Aaron,
welcome.
Okay, There's literature available over here. If you can fold it, it's free. Or if you need a book, just see a home group member. We can make attractive terms for you. Also, this group never announces any of their events before it's 30 days before the event. So I'm not announcing that we have this event. But I am I'm letting you know that on this table there's these green flyers. You can take them with you. You can take them to your group. You can put them on your home group's table. You can give them to other people and announce it for us. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be at this table right after this meeting, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or help you in any way that I can. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, could we thank our wonderful panel again, please? I'd like to thank everyone who participated tonight, and after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Granby Street.
I mean, oyster cheese dip.
I got that right, didn't I?
No?
What is it?
22nd and Colonial.
See, I was so proud of myself, too. 22nd and Colonial. It's like a new discovery. We've been going there for 6 years. I only know how to get there. I can't tell you. I am so sorry. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, please? Nice and loud. Please. Thank you.
I'm Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
Shall we circle up?
Let's go in front of the table.
Okay.
Trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation.